This is AP and Spence. We're two lawyers talking college sports and sports law in general. It's kind of a little bit of a cloudy, rainy, windy day here in Portland. I just wonder, like, when is spring going to come? Because we have been, like, cold and rainy nonstop.
Yeah, and it's basically the unofficial start of summer, Memorial Day weekend.
That's right. But it's going to be raining and cold all weekend.
Yeah, I feel like, man, the last part of, like, April and May in Oregon has been making up for last year. Last year was hot, sunny, long. This has been kind of cloudy, rainy, gloomy. But I'm kind of ready for it to change. I mean, as it changes into June, I'm not looking for clouds and 60s. I would like some more 70s and 80s and some sunny blue. I want to see your white skinny legs out, Spence, with some shorts on at work.
Sun's
right?
Suns out, guns out.
Yeah,
for sure.
I mean, suns out. Yeah. Sky's out, thighs out for
That's
me.
Right.
You
That's
know,
right.
And let's go. So I think it's coming. You know what I mean? We're getting there. And Oregon's best weather, I've always said, is after July 4th through August, and a little bit of September is pretty good too. So we're coming into Oregon's best weather, and I think we got some camping plans, some barbecues planned.
Love
you guys
it.
Got baseball going, right?
Baseball's full swing.
Yeah.
Little League baseball, nothing better.
Yeah. So,
and you know, there's a lot still going on. You know, last week we talked to that A&M fan, Drew Diener, who indicated, you know, talked about kind of what's going on with A&M and the big battle between Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban. That's kind of died down a little bit.
Yeah.
But interestingly, a Texas A&M kid who decommitted, number 3 overall quarterback, now has committed to Alabama. So if Jimbo Fisher bought all these players, is Bama doing the same thing? And now, do you think Nick Saban won't be as mad about this?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I feel like Nick Saban's fake mad. I really do. And I think he's mad because it's not working for him. But if they suddenly start getting an influx of name, image, and likeness transfers and deals and people coming in, he's going to love it. You know that's happening. And, you know, that's kind of part of that rivalry thing, right? Rules for thee, not for me. And, you know, I don't like what you're having success, but if I have success, like, it's always like Nick Saban, I'm having success because I'm doing it the right way. You're having success because you're cheating or you're buying players.
Yeah.
Or, you know.
Saban was the biggest hater of the spread quick offense.
Yep.
And now he's totally embraced it.
Totally.
And only hires – only hires offensive coordinators that are going to run it. I mean, it's just the guy. I mean, I respect him, right? I respect him.
You got to respect
the
record.
He's an amazing coach and has done an incredible job. But I've never really liked the guy. He just comes across as just being a whiner. If things aren't going exactly how he wants, he gets all bent out of shape and upset.
Yeah, Coach K, I feel like at Duke is similar, right?
Same.
Like,
they're cut from the same cloth.
Same cloth. You know, I can respect their record. They're great coaches. But they've had a lot of advantages, and they like things when it goes their way. They don't like it when it doesn't go their way. And you know, we'll see how much longer Nick Saban's going to hang in the college football world. But Alabama's going to be pretty good this next year, unfortunately, again.
Yeah.
So we'll go from there.
Well, yeah. So let's – but there's – I mean, we're a couple of months away from fall camp starting, right?
Yeah, 1st of August.
1st of August, and Oregon's bringing in a new coach for the first time
in a
few years. Cristobal had been there 3-4 years, right? And they'd had pretty good success. Not incredible, but pretty good.
But a lot of 9-3, 10-2-ish records.
They won the Pac-12 that one year, the COVID year. They beat USC in the Pac-12.
Yeah.
I felt like that was a pretty fair game. You were pretty excited about that.
Yeah. I was so bitter because Oregon didn't win the North, Washington did, and USC fans said, well, if Washington can't go, then you should just award us because we're the two teams that made the conference. Instead, they were like, oh, you're opening up an old boot.
I am.
You pulled that band-aid. You knew what was coming. It was a little Jack in the Box.
That was a poke.
And then the Jack in the Box came out. And so I won't even go back to those old wounds. But, yeah, I wasn't happy about it because Oregon got like a 14-day, break, and we had a 6-day break. Anyways, I digress. But speaking of the Ducks in general.
Yeah, that's why
you know, because that's, yeah, exactly. So the Ducks, yeah, we're talking Ducks football today because we thought, hey, we do this podcast in Oregon. Let's talk about a local team that's got some hype around them, and let's bring on a guest. We have brought a cool guest on today, Spence. Do you know who the guest is?
Yeah, let's go to the phones. Let's have some fun.
Yeah, let's go to the phones. It's going to be Isaac Hovet.
That's right.
Lead pastor, New Hope Church in Salem, Oregon. And he's been a lifelong college football fan, I think a Duck fan for a long, long time, and is going to have some really good insights for all of us.
All right, let's go chat with him. right, this is AP and Spence, two lawyers talking college sports and sports law in general. And we're going to the phones this afternoon. And who do we have on the phones?
We have a special guest today. We have Isaac Hovett.
Okay.
And Isaac is the lead pastor at New Hope Church in Salem, Oregon. It's off, I know you're familiar with Salem a little bit.
Love Salem.
Yeah, yeah. So some of the listeners may or may not be. I know we have listeners now verified, Spencer, in all 50 states.
That's right.
And what, 30 countries?
40 countries.
40 countries, yeah. My bad. Yeah, 40 countries and 50 states. Not to brag, we're just saying everybody's going to be familiar with Salem.
That's right. Salem is a beautiful town.
Yes, it is. But New Hope Church is a fantastic church. I happen to attend New Hope Church, and it's off of Corden Road in Salem, Oregon. And so Isaac here, I'll let him introduce himself, of course, but we brought him on because we thought we need somebody that knows something about Ducks football.
Okay.
And we're talking.
He's the guy.
Yeah, he is the guy. Okay. And we're talking Ducks football today. So, first of all, Isaac, thank you so much for being on the podcast today. And how are you doing on this lovely Friday afternoon?
Oh, yeah. Aaron, Spence, it's great to be on the podcast with you and to talk about the Ducks and whatever else comes up. I'm doing well. The skies were a bit gray today, and I missed those bursts of sunshine we've got. But, imagine by the time football season rolls around, I'll be complaining, especially if I'm sitting on the sunny side of the great Autzen Stadium. So maybe I should appreciate the gray skies while we have them.
Oh, man.
Did you know it never rains at Autzen Stadium? Have you heard that?
Yeah, they always say it, right? Is that the saying? It never rains at Autzen Stadium?
That's the saying, and most of the time that's true. And we just all ignore the rain when it's not.
Well, you know, and I know what it is. You know Phil has a system where he blasts something into the air and he's dispersing clouds and probably spending $4 billion on it per year. I'm telling the NCAA, it's a violation for sure.
Absolutely.
We're
going to...
Okay. Well, hey...
but that's how they start every game there, right? It never rains at Autzen Stadium.
Oh.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, you know what's going to rain this year is touchdowns if the Trojans play there. But I don't think they play there this year.
But guess who does? BYU plays there this
year. Oh, yeah. So, Isaac, just so you're aware, Spence is kind of a BYU honk is how I would sort of an alum. I'll give him that. He is an alum. But he's also a bandwagoner, right, Spence?
Not at all. I'm a diehard BYU fan.
Oh,
they could be 0-12 or 12-0, and I'm still a fan.
Okay. Well, that's fair enough. And I'll give you that because you're wearing a Mariners jersey today.
Yeah.
And the Mariners, I believe, are like maybe – are they the worst team in baseball?
That's right. They're one of the worst teams in baseball. But I pick my teams and I stick with them. I don't like flip around depending on what city I'm living in.
That's a shot at me. That's me because, go Lakers, right? But now it's go Blazers again. Anyways, okay. Well, I digress. So, Isaac, so we were talking today about Ducks football, and I was thinking about a couple of things because I grew up in Eugene, actually, River Road in Eugene. I went to Aubrey Park Elementary in Eugene there in Santa Clara area, I think it's called, and if you're fancy. And I was really, really a huge Duck fan growing up. My grandpa went to Oregon. He was actually friends with some people that worked at Oregon. My dad used to run on the campus there. It was just like, I grew up and it was like magical place. The green, the yellow, you know, the campus was cool. I think Animal House was filmed there. And then it was like, but every time I would go, it was like half full, ugly sort of uniforms in some respect. And the team that was always like 4-8 or 5-7. And I was just like, hey, you know, we upset UCLA. I feel really good about the season, you know, And that felt like that was kind of me in the, you know, late 80s, early to mid 90s is kind of when I was sort of a fan. Now, Isaac, do you go back as a fan of the Ducks to back at that time as well?
Yeah, I do, Aaron. You know, similar experience, but I have to confess to all the fans, I was actually born a Beaver fan. I was born in Polk County, and lived in Monmouth for the first 8 years of my life, and so was just kind of, you know, by default, a Beaver fan. And then we moved to Lane County when I was 8 years old, and I think it was that first fall in Lane County. This would have been the late 80s. And at the Civil War. My dad took me to the Civil War, and I went as a Beaver fan, and we sat at General Mission in the end zone and watched the Ducks absolutely destroy the Beavers. And by the third quarter, I was in tears, angry that the Ducks were winning and that my Beavers were losing. And I remember walking out of the stadium, and just college football was just the worst thing ever for me at that moment. But then, you know, unlike Spence, who never changes his allegiances, apparently, over time, living in Lane County, and Spence, I can't believe this connection I'm going to have with you right now. It was, I attended Oregon versus BYU, Ty Detmer,
yep.
And BYU, I think they were ranked fourth in the nation.
That's correct.
They came into Austin Stadium, national television. I volunteered to park cars with Campus Life outside the stadium, and that meant we got general admission tickets. We snuck up to the 50-yard line to sit on the staircase halfway through the first quarter, and I was sold when Marcus Woods, nose tackle for the Ducks, sacked Ty Detmer in the end zone. He bowled him over. You can find it on YouTube. He just pushed him over in the end zone. Safety, Oregon won that day, you know, by 14 or something, and I was hooked. The atmosphere was just amazing as we upset number 4 BYU.
Yeah, I was not at that game, but my dad was, and he'll listen to this podcast, I'm sure, and he may have a tear rolling down his cheek, because that was a really, really bad loss. We had beat Miami. University of Miami that year.
The U.
And we steamrolled another team. Then we were playing the Ducks, and I think we were like 20-point favorites, and we just went in and got beat. You know, the Ducks came out with their hair on fire, and it was a great, crazy game. My dad was at that game and did not come home happy that day, I'll tell you that.
Well, you know what's fantastic about that is that not only did Oregon get the win, they created a lifelong fan in Isaac Hovind. At the expense of your team.
That's great. Oh, gosh, I feel honored and just truly blessed.
Yeah, yeah. So that is fantastic. That's. Well, see, it's so amazing because it's a magical time. So the Ducks, in talking about expectations over time, when I talk about my Trojans, the expectations have been high for a long, long time, right? When you think of like, you know, the 70s and the 80s and the 90s. It's not like the Trojans were bottom feeders and then suddenly emerged on the scene. They've been on the scene for quite some time. Where I don't know if I could say the same about the Ducks. I feel like sometime in the 90s, I'm not an expert at this, but it's sometime in the 90s, it seems like there was a change of expectations, a change of uniform, an infusion of money and energy. They started getting kind of sold out games and becoming really good. Isaac, what do you think about that? Has there been a change in expectations and performance and fandom and all of it with the Ducks football sometime between the 80s and today?
Absolutely. There has been a change. I was at 1994 when the Ducks, you know, the famous Kenny Wheaton's going to score the interception that sealed the deal for the Ducks to go to the Rose Bowl. And, you know, that was unprecedented. And I remember the feeling around Ducks football was just electric. And then, you know, in the subsequent years, there started to be sustained success. And, you know, Mike Bellotti, I think, built a great program in which players that were maybe not the five-star recruits that USC was, you know, accustomed to, or however they were rated then. But, you know, the sustained success created over time, you know, if you pass the Joey Harrington years and, you know, you move into the early 2000s with Chip Kelly coming in, suddenly we're no longer the underdogs that are fighting, you know, just for whatever they can get. Now we're a perennial favorite. Maybe now we're favored over USC, over Washington when it comes into town. And I think it changed quite a bit for those of us who had been raised in that rise where every success was just surprising and exciting. And you feel like you were taking it to the big guys. whether that was USC, UCLA, Washington, you know, at the time. Those are the programs. And it, for me as a fan, I recognized over time that expectations were far less fun to deal with than the what if we actually topple the big guy.
Yeah, I've wondered about that, you know, in the sense of like, and Spencer could probably talk about this with BYU. I know for me at USC, if they're expected to, you know, under Pete Carroll, right, and they're supposed to go 11-1 or maybe 12-0, and if they go into Research Stadium, I don't think this ever happened. Maybe one time it happened where they went to Research Stadium and the stupid Beavers derailed them. And made him go 12-1. You know, maybe that happened once. And but it was like almost gut wrenching to the point where I'd almost rather the team have been 8-4, but we pulled some big upset, right? Because I was almost more disappointed in that because my expectations were so high. When we won, it didn't feel as good. It was like we were expected to. And then if we lost, it was like, how could that happen? So it was almost like didn't have a lot of highs. It was just even keel or lows. Spence, what do you think for you with BYU?
I mean, BYU comes into every season, especially now that we're currently independent, right? So it's a little bit different because if we don't have a good season, then that means we're relegated to some no-name bowl game, you know? So we have to have a really good season in order to go to a big bowl game. So it's tough. When you lose, it's like, well, what are you fighting for, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas next year we're going to be going to the Big 12, you know, it'll be a little bit different. You know, a lot of people will say the Big 12 is a better football conference overall, top to bottom, than the Pac-12. A lot of people have said that, I know. And so I'm excited about that. That'll be good.
Top to bottom. Well, I do know that BYU dodged USC this year. Did you hear about that? Like USC was
next year.
Oh, next year coming up. I consider it this year because the past is behind us, but that's okay. Yeah.
I can't remember what happened the last two times BYU played USC, actually.
I don't remember. That's the past.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure the last
time. I'm a forward looking guy.
I'm pretty sure the last time BYU played Oregon was in the Vegas Bowl in 2006, which was really good for BYU.
I do remember that. It was like really windy. I feel like Oregon had a kick that went like 1 yard.
That was Oregon State, actually.
Okay.
That was the Oregon, we played them. It was, we beat them 38-8. I was at that game. That was a good game.
Okay.
You remember that game, man. Isaac?
No, if I had been there, you might have stolen my fickle heart and I would have become a BYU.
Hey, okay.
Apparently, that's how it works.
Yeah, I guess so. Hopefully, you'll be at the next game, the BYU Oregon game that's coming up.
As a fan, Isaac, of the Ducks, what is the most painful loss that you have experienced?
Let's see. I was in person. Was it back-to-back years with the one loss that the Ducks took?
Yeah.
Was Arizona at home? I was at that game.
Was it the previous year?
That was brutal.
Or the following year? It was Stanford at home. Was the same thing where it was just. And in both cases, well, here's what I appreciate. I will say, being at a game with a big loss. As opposed to watching it on TV, I would prefer to be there in person. And here's why. Because when you watch the game at home, you know, you're with maybe your family and everybody's angry because you have these expectations. Again, here's that word, expectations. And then the game is over. And by the time the game is done, you can't stand the announcers because, of course, you know, they favored the other team and everybody's angry. And then you just turn it off and you just have to, like, go to your room. But when you're at the game and you lose, I mean, that game, you know, it was quiet and everybody, it was like a walk of mourning all the way to our cars and everybody's just mourning together and you don't, you know, it was like a grief process together. And by the time you get in the car, you know, and you can even turn on the radio and listen like, okay, what happened? But at home, it's too abrupt. So anyway, yeah, that Arizona game, I think I was there with my mom and it was just so painful to watch.
Oh, that's such a good story. Well, misery loves company, as they say, right? And so if you're all sad together, you walk out together. My worst one, Spence, I mean, ever, it was USC at Oregon on Halloween night. And it was a house of horrors. Let me tell you, I was at that game. We got blasted, I think, 46-26. I had some people in front of me, behind me, and beside me were all Duck fans, and I became part of the show because it was me and a buddy that were at the game. We were wearing USC stuff, and people were dressed up in skull masks and Halloween costumes, and it was intense. And they were honest, and then we got blown out, and then we had to have a walk of shame amongst some Duck fans all the way back to the car at night. It was a brutal, like I didn't, and then I turned it on, and it was like, look what the magic the Ducks did. I had to relive. So that kind of misery was like misery by yourself. Is so similar to like being at home alone and turning the TV off, but then having all the fans come to your house and sit in your room with you and mock you. So it made it, you know, and I didn't have any remote to throw anywhere. So yeah, it was, you know, so I get it. I mean, right. Cause that's, I think the problem with expectations is it raises expectations, right? And so when your expectations are high, if they're not met, you're disappointed. If they are met, they're just meeting your expectations. They're not exceeding them. And you don't have the opportunity to exceed expectations if you're supposed to go 12-0. And so because of that, there's a sports psychology to that, I think. And so then I think so I wish that USC was a bad team and they were, and they just...
No, you don't.
I don't, actually. That's the problem.
No true fan wants their team to be bad. Even though I've been a Mariner fan my whole life, and I know they stink every year. Every year I think, this is the year we're going to make the playoffs and we're going to win it all. This year.
Hope springs eternal.
And then we're already 10 games under 500. Yeah, you know, so it's like, but that's okay, you know?
Yeah.
That's okay.
But the expectations aren't there. But imagine like the Yankees or the Dodgers. They have expectations. Now the Dodgers, let's say they don't go to the World Series this year. Those fans are disappointed.
Yeah.
You would be excited because the Mariner fans aren't experienced there. But if they won back-to-back-to-back.
I'd be excited if they just had a winning record.
That's fair. That's fair.
Yeah. All right.
Well, okay, so Isaac, speaking of expectations, the Ducks are bringing in a brand new coaching staff. This, you know, going, I mean, for years the Ducks have gone in-house, hiring people that they know, and now the last, three that they've hired have been out. You know, we got Crystal Ball.
Well, let's go, how did it work with Taggart? How did that hire work, would you say, Spence?
Poorly?
Oh, right, okay.
He was not good. But then he leaves for Florida State.
He leaves for Florida, the state of Florida.
Yeah, and then Crystal Ball comes in. Crystal Ball did a good job.
Where'd Crystal Ball go?
Miami.
The state of Florida. Yeah. Yeah, they're all bringing their talents to Florida. These are not local kids. They could have hired a Cal coach. Do you know his name?
Oh, what's his name? I know.
Justin Wilcox.
I just said it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But they didn't, right? And they hire. Who do they end up hiring, Isaac, as their new coach?
Yeah, this guy Dan Lanning, who obviously did well as a defensive coordinator in Georgia. You know, I grew up playing sports against Justin Wilcox and saw his competitive edge as a Junction City kid. And also, he was at Oregon, played cornerback for the University of Oregon. Tough kid, tough competitor. I was hopeful that we would get a local guy, but they went for the big name, and I think the potential, which is what they saw in Willie Taggart. And so, my expectations are very, well, I wouldn't say they're low, because you just can't have low expectations when, you know, the whole ethos of the Oregon community now is to win a national championship. That's the singular focus. And while I appreciate that drive for success, the expectations are always going to be high. Unproven as a head coach, obviously, because he hasn't been a head coach before. And I think we saw with Crystal Ball, you know, some of that inexperience in game coaching and in preparation. I would say that Mario was outcoached, it seemed to me, from what I can see, mostly sitting in my recliner, that he was outcoached quite a bit. So, that experience and being able to develop players, which gets into the whole change and how recruiting and transfers and NIL stuff works. So, I would say, medium expectations about what is going to happen. Obviously, he can recruit. He's got that turned around, but we'll see about actually coaching.
Well, he's stepping right into the fire, right? Because he's got Georgia to start the season, right?
Basically, like, a home game for Georgia. It's like in Atlanta. The Ducks playing in Portland and Georgia coming out.
Like, welcome to the show here, buddy. You're facing, you know, Randy Johnson or something. and then they play Eastern Washington, right? Then they turn around and they play BYU, right? And BYU's going to have – we're going to have one of our best teams in years, at least offensively. So it's going to be like
– I mean, right know, there, that's basically for the Ducks, that's two losses. The only win I see is against BYU.
Yeah,
that's an easy one.
anything.
No. Hey, but I mean, but that's a tough. You're right. I mean, he's going to be challenged. It is a concern in a sense that he hasn't been a head coach, right? I mean, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. You know, I know that I would say that Lane Kiffin, was an excellent coordinator. He's been a decent head coach. He's had some rocky, you know, Steve Sarkisian. I'm just using them because they're from the USC tree. They've been okay head coaches, but they were excellent, coordinators. We'll see if Dan Lanning can make the transition. I think he can. Because I think he will. Because I think Georgia is a program. It's a system. He's going to know how to come there and have a lot of confidence. If he was coming from maybe a lesser program, hadn't been on the biggest stage, I'd be a little nervous for him. I think he's going to do fine. But time will tell. But he definitely has his recruiting chops. He's got his defensive mind here. And so I guess Isaac, thinking of that. What is your expectation as a fan of Ducks football for this year, as far as maybe wins and losses? Is it making the Pac-12 championship? Is it a certain bowl? What do you either your expectation or your belief is real is you know of what could be realistic for them this year?
Oh gosh, you know, I find it more difficult than ever as a Ducks fan to be able to predict. And I would say that goes back to the continuity that the Oregon program used to have. Used to have a sense that whatever recruiting was less important about than how the players would be developed and the scheme on the field. And, you know, going back to the Chip Kelly and the Mike Bellotti days, you knew that we weren't going to be out-coached. And so there was a framework that you could kind of, I feel, base your expectations on and have a reasonable expectation and maybe, you know, look at some of the games that would be more competitive or that, you know, just were not approachable for the Ducks at those times. But now, with all the discontinuity of both the Oregon coaching staff in recent years and the discontinuity of players sticking with programs, I think it's a whole new, truly a whole new ball game. And I think this is why in recent years that even the paid professional full-time prognosticators just seem to be so wrong in the early stages of the game. It's not because they are unable to evaluate talent or scheme or coaching. I think it's because everybody is starting. Who knows where programs are actually starting? There's so much being reset year in and year out to where continuity is a big deal. So for me, I would feel really happy with a 8 or 9 win season. That's where I'm setting my expectations. I do think that first stretch that Georgia is, you know, that would be rocky defeating Apollo Creed in Rocky 1, not just going 15 rounds. That would be him winning, you know.
Put him on his butt. Yeah.
And I think Eastern Washington, you know, you come down from the letdown of that. That's a trap game right there because you're already looking ahead to BYU, which is obviously going to be a strong opponent. So I think it could be a rough beginning and maybe a chance for Dan Lanning to show, you know, his moxie and chops to not resurrect the season, but be able to build momentum that we as Duck fans would be feeling towards the end of the year, but maybe not at the beginning of the year.
Hey, Isaac, let me ask you a question. You brought something up really interesting there that you were chatting about, and I was curious, you know, you being a lifelong college football fan, and I assume probably a college sports fan in general, how do you feel like the NIL stuff and the transfer portal is affecting your fandom, right? Like, because I know a lot of people who have been lifelong fans who are really struggling with all the turnover and the amount of money that is going into these kids' hands and, you know, that kind of stuff. Do you feel like it's affecting your fandom? Is it changing it at all?
Yeah, absolutely, Spence. I think you're speaking to something really important in terms of how fans become fans. And I think fans become fans because they can build some attachment with players, coaches, not just potential, And there's so much focus right now on the potential of athletes coming out. You know, the recruiting gets so much hype these days. And then, but what actually makes a fan, I believe, is you see a kid come into a program, as it historically has been, and he's going to be there for 4 years or maybe 5 years with a red shirt. And you see him develop and get chances, and you know the name, and the kid has some sort of identity, like that's our guy, you know, or in, you know, in girl sports, that's our girl, and she's a part of us, and she represents us. I think the transfer portal and, you know, the name, image, likeness stuff, it short circuits that, because you get kids coming and going, and really the focus is on potential, and that kid is focusing on, I have the potential to make this kind of money, or I should have this kind of experience. And so they're transferring out of programs. And I do think that the attachment for fans, it lessens. You know, gone are the days of, you know, rallying behind guys that have been there for years. I think that's going to be the outlier. You know, it's going to be it's not going to be the Joey Harrington, you know, play for all his years, and you could really rally and have a sense of identity behind that player. I think those days are going to be behind us and short-lived, and I think it short-circuits the experience for the fan, and will make it harder for them to feel as connected to the teams overall as time goes on. That's my thought.
Yeah, I 100% agree. You know, I mean, what would have happened to Marcus Mariota had he transferred after the first year because he wasn't happy with the type of offense they were playing? Like, you know, he transfers to USC or wherever, and then all of a sudden it's like, well, now he's USC's guy. He's no longer Oregon's guy, right? But now,
yeah,
now there are life. You know, how many fans became fans of the Tennessee Titans after Marcus Mariota got drafted by them? You know, after he left Oregon, you know, it's like, well, I'm going to follow this guy.
Yeah.
You know, now.
Yeah.
And we're not going to have that anymore.
Yeah, I miss that too, because I think that's a big part of sports is the loyalty and the following and the spending years investing. It's kind of that idea where, like, you buy someone's jersey and you're wearing it.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not going to feel good, Spencer, if you buy a jersey from a Mariners fan and then they're on the Yankees next year. You're burning that thing.
Yeah.
In your front
yard.
That's why
I only buy professional jerseys that don't have names on the back.
Yeah, yeah. See, well, the good news, in USC, if you notice, they don't have names on their back because what's more important is the name on the front.
Oh, get out.
Okay, I worked it in. But anyways, but you're right. I mean, name, image, and likeness. Now, USC's tried to use it to their advantage because, you know, Clay Helton was fired. They had a program sort of in shambles a little bit. I mean, the Beavers are coming in and railroading USC. At the Coliseum. They hadn't done that in like 50 years. I mean, heck, BYU beat us. I mean, what is going
on?
In the Coliseum. At that point, it's like, let's scrap this.
We went to that game, didn't we?
We went to that game together. My daughters were there. My daughters were crying, Spencer. I mean, this is so, and they're 2 and 3.
I got them some cotton candy.
Yeah, you did. So they felt a little bit better. The lips were all. Anyways, but so, you know, but the name, image, and likeness has worked to USC's advantage in the sense of let's reset, let's rebuild. It's created a tool for that. It's given some opportunities for kids to make money, to maybe switch schools. But the problem is, are the kids transitioning for the right reasons? Or is it like, well, I really want to buy a Range Rover, and if I go sign with USC, I'm going to get signed by Beats by Dre, and I'm going to get $2 million a year, and I'll go play with them, and I'll leave my home in Texas to go do that. And that becomes more of a business decision, and it kind of breaks my heart as a fan of college amateur sports, where the business and the money are becoming kind of a key focus. And so I don't love it personally. I think that it's kind of messy, and I think some guardrails are going to be put on it. But speaking of recruiting in general, Oregon, I feel like, has done a fantastic job over the years attracting premier talent to Eugene, Oregon. It's easier to attract talent, in my opinion, to Los Angeles, Texas, Florida, big markets, sun, big city. There's not a lot of football talent that comes out of the Pacific Northwest, but Oregon has been able to do it and get them at a very high level in Eugene, Oregon. They've out-recruited USC for a few years, out-recruited Texas, out-recruited Florida. How are they doing that? So Isaac, I guess I'd ask you, how has Oregon had so much success, would you say, in recruiting over the past like 5 or 10 years? relative to other schools that are in kind of smaller markets. For some reason, I would say the Ducks are probably a top 10 or top 15 recruiting team nationally over the last 10 years. How do you think they've been able to do that in Eugene, Oregon?
Well, I do think they've done a good job with establishing, you know, a national brand, and so familiarity, and have allowed themselves, they've distinguished themselves. You know, if you think about Joey Harrington on the side of, you know, what was the city in or the building in New York City that, you know, Joey for Heisman, and so obviously the money of Nike, and then the establishment of just, you know, phenomenal facilities so that, you know, student athletes that come in are feeling like this is a top-notch place to be. This is a place that has, there's thoughtfulness and the resource behind it to make it be appealing. And they've been able to capitalize on that. And I suppose that has snowballed over the years and become something sustainable for them, not just one good recruiting class, not just one particular recruiter, but now multiple coaches and multiple recruiters that have been able to be successful capitalizing on that national brand name recognition, obviously funded generously by Mr. Nike.
Yeah, Uncle Phil has done a great job with that. You know, I feel like Oregon, so I had the fortunate opportunity when USC, when I was working in athletic compliance, to go inside Oregon's, a lot of people have been there, but I was in a place called Area 51. I don't know if either of you have been there. Nope. But what it is it's like this, it's called Area 51, and there's a kind of a sign there, and they have this desk that comes out of the ground. There's like frosted windows that can, you can touch them to do different things. It's got bamboo floors. It's got, you know, some, then there's a recruiting area that's like a pool table owned by Michael Jackson. There's this weird kind of chair that the recruits can sit in. There's leather-bound walls made from basketballs and footballs. It's really bizarre. I mean, it's something you would see if, like, you went to some obscenely wealthy like a billionaire or something like that. What you'd imagine, like, Elon Musk's house to look like. Just, it's really obscure. There's, like, maybe, like, a dinosaur bone or something. But it's so cool there that I thought, wow, I felt excited. And at the time, I was like a 37-year-old man, right? And I'm like, I'm excited. Where do I sign? You know, let's go. I want to do compliance here, right? And maybe not. I was on an interview. I don't remember. Maybe I was, but I won't divulge those details. But I remember that I was there, and it was a cool experience. And I thought, man, no wonder these 16, 17, 18-year-old kids are loving this, right? Because it's so cool. Yeah. It's so exciting. They've really capitalized on that, like, excitement, that rock star, that kind of lightning, that electric crowd. It's almost like an SEC team in the Northwest. I mean, it really is. Lanning hit there. Whoever said that on the Ducks staff recently said it's like an SEC team on the West Coast. It absolutely is. And they do a fantastic job of that. And so I think Oregon has figured out what right buttons to push with recruits and young kids, and they've pushed them, and they've outpushed them over the other programs like Texas, who it's like, look at our tradition, a wine and cheese crowd, right? And USC has that a little bit too, but older boosters, and look at our history. Oregon's like, look at this cool stuff that we have. You want to see this wall of shoes that we have? And they do. Everybody wants to see it, and so it's really, really cool. So I think because of that, Oregon's really, really done a great job. And because of that, they've gotten on top of the Pac-12 in a lot of ways, and really a lot of the country, and really been a fun team. And when Chip Kelly had them rocking and rolling, that was the fastest, wildest team I've ever seen in my life. I mean, I hated them to death, but they were so fun to watch. I remember I was at a USC, it was Lane Kiffin versus Chip Kelly. It was at the Coliseum. We lost 62-53 or something like that. It was something like back and forth wild. And before, I was talking to the refs before the game, and I said, can you let them actually, like, set the chains before you drop the ball for them to hike it? And he's like, no, yeah, I would love to do that. I'll watch that. But this team is so fast, we're not able to get the chains set. And right now, and the rules are written, they can hike the ball as soon as it's dropped. And we have to so we're running to catch up with them. And I was trying to influence illegally probably the refs, and now that I say that. But the refs would drop it, and then the Ducks took it to us. They were just such a fun team to watch. But I have to ask you at this point, you know, Isaac, the Ducks have been on top of USC for a while now. They beat them in the Pac-12 championship recently. But recently, it seems like with this new hire of Lincoln Riley, some transfers coming in. They're getting a lot of ESPN hype, which is nothing new for USC, but they're getting a lot of hype now. Maybe there's some talent there. Do you think a rise of USC is good for the Pac-12? Is it good for Oregon? Or does it harm Oregon? Or what is your impression as a fan of the Ducks of a USC on the rise?
Well, I'm grateful for any program in the Pac-12 that gets strengthened. Honestly, you know, there's certain programs, for example, Washington has been, you know, disappointing to not be able to sustain a level of success. And I think, you know, as Oregon rose to prominence within the Pac-12, I think that was good for everyone, and it drives competition, which I think is good. Of course, we all benefit, or not we, well, I guess we can all benefit. It seems to be beneficial for the team that's on top if you have a weak league behind you, because you just look like the superpower, and that might be good for that one team. So for me as a fan, I think it's great if USC is strong. And I think every year, if Oregon gets hit in the mouth and we have to do identity, you know, self-check, are those players there to work hard and succeed and be determined and grit through, or are they hoping to kind of sail it in along with whatever, you know, bonuses they're getting for their name, image, and likeness? And so I don't mind a very competitive league. I don't mind losing close games if the overall competitiveness of a league rises. So I think the rise of USC is good. It drives the competition and hopefully makes Oregon a better program over time.
Yeah. What do you think, Spence? I mean, when BYU enters the Big 12 coming up,
are
you hoping that immediately the Big 12 is just garbage and BYU is dominant?
No, I totally agree with what Isaac was saying. I think it's better to have more parity, more the games be closer. You know, and, you know, obviously you want to win more, but if you have more parity and it's more fun, the games, you know, BYU was in the whack forever and we would just demolish teams, right? And we were winning all these games 56-6, and, you know, it was just like, but then we would go out and play the big boys and we'd get our tails handed to us, you know? So it'll be nice for BYU to be in a more competitive league and playing games. And if we're winning those games big, then people can say, well, hey, maybe BYU is pretty good, you know.
That's
what you want. You want the Pac-12 to go out, and maybe an Oregon upsets a Georgia, or maybe USC beats, you know, whoever, Alabama or whoever they play. You know, you want those types of games because you want them to play outside of the conference. The problem with the Pac-12 is the perception is Pac-12 is weak because they go out in their non-conference and they get beat. BYU went 5-0 against them last year, right?
Like, yeah.
So what did that do for the perception of the Pac-12, you know?
Because that was the thing. I mean, they're thinking if BYU's beating you,
right,
this Pac-12's garbage.
BYU was pretty good last year, right? We were a top 20 team.
Yeah, you were really good. Yeah.
But what I'm saying is the perception is that if you're not strong, you know, if you're not going out in your non-conference, and then you end up just kind of, you know, cannibalizing yourselves, right?
Yeah.
Because that's what happens is the Pac-12 is so – There's not a big dip. There hasn't been over the last few years. You could have a Washington State or Oregon State team
exactly right
come up and beat an Oregon or a USC in some fluke game.
Yeah,
you know that happened. Seemed to happen every year. I mean, Arizona was awful last year, and they almost beat the Ducks last year.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
I mean, so that's one of the things that I really like about the Pac-12. I just think they need to elevate their whole brand and all of their teams. So that they're more competitive when they're playing their non-conference, but then the conference games look even better.
Yeah, and perception is reality in a lot of ways, and you know, even though the Ducks beat Ohio State at Ohio State, maybe they at the end it didn't go so well for them, and so that was forgotten. But I think if USC's boat rises, Oregon's boat rises. They got a guy from the SEC coach and the Ducks. We got Lincoln Riley with USC. Utah's getting a lot of love. If they can get three or four teams that are kind of in the mix nationally and in the top 20, I think that raises them up. It raises their profile up. People start paying attention. And then if they have a team that with a one loss on their record that comes out of the Pac-12, maybe they'll get the nod for the playoff and not give it to Notre Dame this time. Yeah. Right? And yeah. And
so we can watch, so we don't have to watch Notre Dame get demolished.
Yeah, it's not Notre Dame 17, Alabama 50. Well, you know, Isaac, I know it's you're busy on a Friday here. One last parting shot. I really appreciate your time today and your analysis. It's always fun talking to you. You got a good understanding of the Ducks and football in general, and kind of the nuances of expectations and fandom and recruiting. One last thing that recently happened is the Pac-12 decided, hey, the Pac-12 championship format, we're going to change it. It used to be, you know, the winner of the North played the winner of the South, and it could turn out that the winner of the North has three or four losses, but just so happened to win, you know, that division, they would meet in the championship. Well, now the Pac-12 said, no, starting this next year, just the best conference records will meet up in the championship. And if that means it's two from the North or two from the South, so be it. First of all, what do you think of that change? And do you think it benefits or hurts Oregon?
Yeah, if I recall, there's a couple years where Oregon did benefit from that arrangement. And so historically, Oregon would have benefited from that arrangement of being able to get into the Pac-12 championship game as a result of winning the North. I was hopeful when that first was implemented that maybe that would create more rivalry, or maybe they were trying to capitalize on some of the already existent rivalry that is in the Pac-12 and put them in these, you know, the North and South categories, and it ups the ante to really beat your neighbors, so to speak. I don't know if it accomplished that. And so from my view, I think it's the right thing to do and eliminates, you know, confusion or accusation. However, on the other side, you know, there's always going to be teams that don't play each other. And so if two of the top teams don't play each other, or, you know, one of the top teams doesn't have to play the third place team and the others did. So it creates some questions of like, well, who did you beat and who didn't you beat? And so I think that's, with having 12 teams in the conference, that's just the reality that you're going to face. You can't, like in historic years, the Pac-10, everybody played everybody every year, as I recall. And so, you know, that obviously whoever emerged from that was a legitimate Pac-10 winner. So I don't have much opinion about it. I just think it's probably the right thing to do. And we'll have to figure out some of those other issues that could arise.
See, and that's why, so Isaac's a very analytical guy, very smart guy, and he hit the nail on the head exactly when he said it could turn out to a situation where it's USC versus Utah in the Pac-12 championship. Oregon left out because maybe they had two losses. Maybe USC had one and maybe Utah had none. And so Oregon's left out, and then let's say USC wins and beats Utah. USC and Oregon never met. They never played.
Yeah.
And what would have happened in that situation? We don't know. It's unanswered. And so if you're going to go to this format, maybe you need to find a situation where you all play each other. Because those sorts of weird things, or if it ends up being Utah and Oregon, and USC didn't play one of those. So you have three really good teams, only two can meet in the championship.
Or last year, Oregon and Utah played, and Oregon got demolished by Utah, and then they had to play them again a couple weeks later in the Pac-12 championship, and this got demolished again. I mean, it was not a good look, right? Honestly.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that was kind of, yeah, that was hard. That was, but now it's going to add Autzen. Utah goes to Autzen. That's going to be – I would like to go to that game, actually. Let's go to that game. And so anyways, yeah. So there's a lot of change out there. You know, I guess as a final thought before we let you go, Isaac, what advice would you have for the listeners that get very impassioned about supporting their team but they have a rivalry with somebody? Maybe it's a family member. Maybe it's a close friend, a coworker that they – you know, or like they're at a law firm with, or something like that, and they trade barbs. But maybe sometimes it can cross the line to where it's mean, or it's like in your face, and it's not. You know what I mean? Like fandom can go that way, where things become kind of like, I beat you, sucker. But it's not as fun. It's more of like where it can cross the line a little bit. I don't know if you've seen that in sports, but where it becomes not fun banter, but it's mean. Do you have any thoughts, final parting thoughts or comments for somebody that's maybe struggling with that and could find a way to kind of harness that in and get away from the competitive, mean-spirited nature that sometimes our sports find us in?
Yeah, well, we certainly do live in a polarized, intense world already, and I would be hopeful that in that world that we are all living in and trying to figure out how to get along or listen to or to respect the other, whoever the other is, I would hope that the sports fan would be able to dial it back and resist, you know, that deep tribal identity that comes through our association with our teams. And so I would encourage people that there's a lot of things that are dividing us these days, and hopefully sports, while we cheer for our team and get excited and are passionate about our teams, that hopefully we can dial that back a bit and allow sports to be something that brings us together. You know, when I'm at the stadium at a Duck game, I usually have the experience of recognizing that there's every class, every race, every creed of people that are all unified around the Ducks on that particular day. And it may be one of the few spaces in our culture that we are brought together as fans of something. And I would hope that Oregon fans would be the kind of fans that the USC fans would come and they felt respected and they felt valued, not diminished just because they happened to associate with the other team. And so I would encourage everyone, that's my final thought, to look deeply and allow sports to bring us together and to not be yet another one of the things that divide us in today's divided world.
Oh, so well said, Isaac. That was awesome. I couldn't say it. There's nothing else to say, Spence.
Mic drop.
That's a mic drop moment. Thank you, Isaac, so much for your time in this afternoon. I know you're a very busy man. You have some exciting things coming up. That's Isaac Hovett, lead pastor at New Hope Church in Salem, Oregon. Hopefully, you know, check it out. Check out their website. You know, check out Isaac. They do things online. You don't always have to live in Salem. And so, Isaac, you know, thank you so much for your time. And hopefully, we can get you back on the podcast maybe right before that Georgia game, and we can chat about it.
Yeah, I'll be cheering for Oregon. I'll be cheering for Oregon for at least 11 games next week, but not 12.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's great. Well, thanks, guys, for the time. It was great chatting. And, go Ducks. And, hey, I'll root for BYU as much as I can as well.
I appreciate that.
I love it. See you, Isaac. Take care.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
That was a heck of a conversation with Isaac. You know, obviously a very articulate guy, loves the Ducks, you know, and it's fun. It's fun to talk to him. But I'll tell you, that story about how he became a Duck fan really cracked me up. And I'm sure my dad, who will be listening to this podcast, will have some thoughts about that, because that game crushed BYU's chance that year of being a special team. We ended up that season, I think we ended up only losing in one other game, and we ended up just like top 10, and Ty Detmer won the Heisman. I mean, it was a whole thing, and that game almost derailed our season. So,
yeah, I mean, it's funny that your BYU Cougars led to the birth of a new lifelong Duck fan in Isaac Hovett.
That's true, but he just said that he's going to be a Cougar fan, you know, from here on out. So I'll take that. We need as many BYU Cougar fans as we can.
We'll ask him before the Oregon-BYU game this year if he's truly a BYU fan. We'll find out.
He can cheer for the Ducks during – that's his team. But,
exactly.
But he said he'll cheer for BYU for the other games, and that's all I'm asking.
That's fair. Yeah, so you get a fan for the other 11 games. And I thought Isaac, again, Isaac Hovett, lead pastor, New Hope Church, was our guest today talking Ducks. I thought he did a fantastic job about talking about expectations and the change of expectations between the 90s and today and the 2000s for the Ducks. They're recruiting their new coaching staff. Sounds like he thinks an 8 or 9 win season would be decent. He'd be happy with that for the Ducks. I think that's very realistic. In fact, I looked at the Ducks' schedule. I wouldn't be surprised if the Ducks go 10-2. I could see them losing to BYU, and I could see them losing to Georgia. A lot of the other games, maybe Utah. We'll see, but they have Utah at home. And the other games, gosh, I look like they're the better team. And so the Ducks could go 9-3 easy.
Yeah, Oregon State's going to be tough, right?
Yeah.
They're getting better. But, yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of the teams they're playing are their tougher games are at home, mm-hmm. their weaker games are away.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they do. I do cheer for the Ducks. I cheer for the Beavers. You know, being home state guys, but unless they're playing BYU, right?
Yeah,
but I definitely will cheer for them when they're playing Utah, for heaven's sake.
Oh yeah, exactly. You're going to cheer for USC when they're playing Utah.
Absolutely.
At Salt Lake. Absolutely. That's going to be a brutal game. But yeah, so it was fun talking about it today, and I think we got a good grasp of Oregon, the rise of USC, that rises all boats maybe. We got BYU's got a bright future going into the Big 12 conference and having some parity there and joining some the big boys, so to speak, and being a fan, right? And in the end, if you noticed, Isaac said, he goes, keep your fandom in check, be respectful, have fun, you can rib people, you can joke. But if it gets mean-spirited, that's where it's not fun. I'm sure you've been there, Spence, where you've been maybe at Utah?
Yeah, well, no, I've never been to a game at Utah.
Would you go with your kids?
I would not go with my kids.
And why is that?
I wouldn't because
Is it just because it's Salt Lake?
No, it's not just because it's Salt Lake. It's because their fans are so ridiculous.
It's not fun, right?
It wouldn't be as fun. Most of the Utah fans, let me put a caveat. 95% of the Utah fans that I've known, and I have some really dear friends who are huge Utah fans, are fun. Everything is fun, right? They beat us, we beat them, it's fun. We go back and forth, and we have a good time. But there's this small faction, and really, I don't even know any Utah fans that are like this, but there is a small faction of Utah fans, just like at UCLA or any other school, who just take it over the line, right? And those are the fans that you got to avoid, right? And you can't avoid them if you're going to their stadium. So no, I would not go to a game at Utah, even if it was, you know, BYU was favored by 30 points and we won by 40. I still wouldn't go, because it wouldn't be enjoyable for me.
Yeah,
I would go to any other stadium. I'd go to Boise State. I hope to go to the Oregon game this year. You know, I'd love to. We play at Arkansas next year. I want to go down to that game. You know, so we play a lot of really, really cool places. I've been to away games. There, most of the time, fans treat everybody with respect. USC, I didn't get any issues at USC.
Although some of the, I guess, student section, a few members of the student section were chanting something about Mormons or something.
Yeah, yeah.
They issued an apology. I didn't hear
it. You couldn't hear it in the stadium unless you were close. But I didn't have any USC fans come up to me and be rude.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
it was, you know.
There's always a few knuckleheads.
And it was a good game for the most part.
Yeah.
You know, and so, most of the USC fans that were around us were fun, and we had a good playful banter back and forth. And anyways, it was great. But yeah, check your fandom, have fun. I it's similar to the way that you practice law, the way I do anyway.
Yes.
And I know you're the same. We try to treat every attorney we deal with respect. We're friendly. We even have some I would call friends on the defense side.
Absolutely.
Once that door closes and you're in court, you're battling, right?
Yep.
And you're at each other's throats and you're objecting and you're doing that. But the second that door opens, you still have to work with these people and you still have to get to know them. You still want to get to know them and treat them with respect. And that's the way, that's the way fandom should be. I need to do a better job at not letting games affect me emotionally.
Yes.
But yeah. I don't feel like, you know, luckily BYU came on the winning side of both of our games that we've had against each other. But I feel like, you know, you handled both of those losses with class. I hope that I handled those wins with class. But that's what you try to do, right? Is you have fun and you can bring it up and you can razz each other. But at the end of the day, you're still friends. Treat people with respect. It's just a game. Let's go.
Yeah, because I remember you were on the hood of my car with your shirt off and you were rolling this BYU towel and screaming in my face. But that was after BYU beat USC, and I felt like, yeah, that's respectful. That's what I'm just kidding. You had all grace.
True.
And class, and yes, in the end, I have fun banter, even on social media, but I think sometimes people will misread that and think, oh, this guy's being a jerk. Well, no, I'm just having fun banter. That's part of the fun to me, but it's all fun and good games. My team's going to win. My team's going to lose. Things happen. Don't take it personal. Love thy neighbor.
That's right.
And if you're a man of morals or of faith or whatever, or you just want to do the right thing, I think listen to that last part of what Isaac said. Take it to heart. And let's have some fun. Let's get to our weekend, Spence. It's Memorial Day weekend.
Let's go.
You know, got a 3-day weekend for a lot of folks, not everybody. And we'll get back at it next week.
Let's do it. All right. Have a great weekend, everybody.
See ya.